Hi, today is February 23rd. I'm Goldie, and welcome to episode 8 of the Diamond Hands podcast, The Money Printer. Remember, I am not a financial advisor, and nothing contained in this show should be considered financial advice. So in the last episode, when I was referring to the extra 25% US dollars that are now in circulation that weren't there last year, and what I was really referring to when I said this was the process of quantitative easing. And this is how the US Federal Reserve, or the US federal government, has approached the COVID-19 recession, as well as it's also how they handled the 2008 crisis. So when you look at houses, equities, crypto, these are all assets that have intrinsic value. There are only so many houses in existence, and houses can provide you with shelter. There are only so many shares of Microsoft in existence, and Microsoft produces computer software. There are only so many Bitcoins in existence. They all have a limited supply. And this is all about supply and demand. If the amount of money in circulation increases, then there is more supply of those dollars, and the demand for each piece of that currency will therefore be lessened. This means that it will cost more dollars to buy any given item that has not also seen its supply increased. So this is why in the last episode that I said that the market still has a lot of room to run as the economy recovers. It's because all of that growth that we've seen over the past year, I believe, has been caused not by actual growth of the economy, but by just devaluing the dollar. So prices of shares and real estate are just rising as a result of each individual dollar just buying less. Now, the US dollar used to be backed by gold, which meant that the dollar that you had in your bank account or in your pocket was it was linked to the price of physical gold that really existed. And this meant that unless a majority of people just unanimously decided that gold was worthless and the price of gold went down, or a boatload of gold was all discovered, the US dollar would be relatively safe from inflation. And this was the case with many currencies, right? The British pound also used to be backed by the gold standard. And what this also meant, though, is that in the event of an economic crisis, you couldn't just print more dollars to stimulate the economy. You would need to actually have the gold to back it up. But this ended in 1971 in the United States, and currently there is no gold standard-based currency because the gold standard was replaced by fiat currency, which essentially means that the state decides that money is worth something, and everybody who lives there and does business with them all just agree on this arbitrary worth that is assigned to these paper bills in your wallet or the number in your bank account. The only reason that the number in your bank account actually has value is because everybody collectively buys into it. If all of a sudden everyone unanimously decided that seashells were a superior form of currency, then the dollar would become worthless overnight, and seashells that you're walking past on the beach would overnight become incredibly valuable. Fiat also means that there is nothing preventing the government from just printing more money. And this can be seen in Zimbabwe, which had crazy runaway inflation, and it led to the price of goods doubling like within the space of hours. So they started the year printing 10 Zimbabwe dollar bills, and they finished the year printing like bills in the billions or trillions of dollars. And essentially, nothing except for the consequences of the devaluing of a country's currency is actually preventing them from introducing more supply to the system. So just remember supply and demand. The more of something that is available, the less that it is worth. That's why Supreme hoodies sell for so much. It's not because they're any warmer or more stylish than the next brand's hoodies. It's because they're made in highly limited batch sizes and only sold in select stores. So in the event of an economic crisis, what is a government to do? The first step, according to common monetary policy, is to lower interest rates. Essentially, the central bank will lower the interest rates, which allows people to borrow more money, and it allows organizations and banks to borrow more money and allow people to buy houses, to go to the store and buy things. It'll allow businesses to expand and continue to grow because they'll finance their growth and they'll finance their operations through debt. while people aren't buying as much items from them. But if you look at a mortgage rate right now, or if you look at a central banking rate, they're almost as low as they can get. You can have negative interest rates. There are some negative interest rates in a few Northern European countries, like some of the Scandinavian countries. But you can't do that for too long. So here in Canada, interest rates right now are, like for a house, you could get an interest rate at 1.4%. And that is previously unheard of. So they can't stay low forever. And they can only get so low. So if you have low interest rates already, like we did pre-COVID, and then some big economic crisis hits, what's the next step? And the next step is to print money in order to spool up the economy again. And so this is called quantitative easing. This is when the central bank purchases long-term securities from the market at large in order to increase the money supply and encourage lending and investment in the market. Essentially, the government will buy these securities, and this adds new money to the economy, and it lowers interest rates by bidding up fixed income securities. So essentially, this is how the U.S. government is printing money. And I'm not a economics genius. I'm literally just reading this off of Investopedia, so don't get too spun up on that. But yeah, when the interest rates are at or approaching zero, that is the next logical step in order for a modern government to avoid a total economic collapse. So it introduces liquidity to the banks, but it can also have the effect of creating some massive levels of inflation. And so in 2008, when quantitative easing was used to stave off the economic crisis that occurred then, we didn't see common goods like meat at the grocery store or gasoline for your car go up a crazy amount due to hyperinflation. But in real estate and in the stock market, we kind of have had that. It hasn't been hyperinflation, but there has been a massive inflation in the cost of equities. And this increased level of inflation in equities is what I think we're going to continue seeing over the next few years, decade or so. And that's why I'm still investing so heavily, even though the markets are hitting all-time highs seemingly every week, except for last week. So are we going to have hyperinflation? Honestly, I don't know. I couldn't tell you. And I think that anybody who gives you a hard yes or a hard no is lying to you, because we can't predict the future. But there are some extremely knowledgeable people who do seem to think that we are going into a period of, if not hyperinflation, very significant levels of inflation. So Michael Burry, the star of The Big Short, like the guy who The Big Short was based off of, seems to think so. If you take a peek at his Twitter, I'll link that in the notes below. Bill Gates is the largest owner of farmland in the United States. And I bet this is not just because he likes feeding the people. It's because farmland has intrinsic value. So if the value of the dollar goes down, the value of the land that produces food to feed the people still need to be fed regardless. So that land is going to grow in value with the deflation of the dollar. I'm not saying that hyperinflation is a guarantee in the cards, but my belief is that we currently are undergoing an increased level of inflation, at least regarding equities and real estate, from what we've previously had. The best way to prepare for inflation, so like if you're like me and you're a government worker, yes, you have stable employment and that is awesome, but you've got a relatively stagnant wage. At least in Canada, the wage is only renegotiated every like 4 years. So if you have hyperinflation starting this year and you've just received your wage negotiation, you are not going to receive any standard of living adjustments to keep up with it for the next probably 3 to 4 years. Because of this, I am at least trying to really diversify my exposure to the dollar's value by putting my money into things with a intrinsic value. So this could be stocks, this could be real estate, this could be cryptocurrency, like I mentioned before. If you're paid in US dollars and you believe that the US dollar is going to be worth less in the future, rather than just putting that money into the bank and letting it devalue on its own, you could convert that money into an asset that you think will retain its intrinsic value. This may be a huge part of why crypto has boomed. If you work in the services industry, you may be able, depending what you do, to just charge more money for the service you provide. You have a far more scalable approach to producing income. If I'm a farmer that sells apples, I could just sell an apple for a dollar this year, and then next year, if there are twice as many dollars in the system and the value of each dollar is worth less, I could just charge $2 for every apple that I make. So I'm still making the same amount of apples, but the amount that I charge for them is just increased to take inflation into account. This is essentially the only way that I personally, as just a retail investor who does this for a hobby, this is the only real way that I see to be able to stay ahead of the curve. If you own property, if you own equity, if you own anything that will retain its intrinsic value regardless of what currency is being used to purchase it, then you're in a good spot to ride out any sort of hyperinflation. But at the end of the day, take what I say with a grain of salt. Anyways, I'm Goldie. It's been an absolute pleasure talking about hyperinflation today. Hopefully we don't actually experience it, because although it would be cool to become a millionaire, it's not really special when everyone else is a millionaire. I'll be back next week with episode 9, which is going to be all about my positions. My investments are extremely exposed to the American markets, so I'm going to go a little bit into detail about why I'm personally okay with this. Have a great week, and I'll be back on February 30th. There's no February 30th. I'll be back on March 2nd.